The Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
I'm going on during this time, I fear there's no one to save me. This all or nothing really got away, you're driving me crazy. I need somebody to hear, somebody to know, somebody to have, somebody to hold. It's easy to say, but it's never the same. I guess I kinda like the way you numbed all the pain. Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pull the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you loved. I'm going under in this time, I fear there's no one to turn to. This all or nothing way of loving, gonna be sleeping without you. Now I need somebody to know, somebody to hear, somebody to have, just to know how it feels. It's easy to say, but it's never the same. I guess I kinda like the way you help me escape. Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pull the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you loved. And I tend to close my eyes when it hurts. Sometimes I fall into your arms. I'll be safe in your soul till I come back around. For now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pull the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love. But now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pull the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love. To let my guard down, and then you pull the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love.
Frequently it's said that music heals the savage breast, and it does more than that, of course, these days. It also helps to celebrate neurodiversity, with stars like Lewis Capaldi also beginning to normalise perceptions. And we're delighted to welcome not one, but three fabulous individuals to actually talk a bit about neurodiversity and the music industry. First of all, principal at the London College of Contemporary Music. It's a delight to welcome back Anthony Hamer-Hodges. How are you, Anthony?
Yeah, great, Alex. Thanks for having us on.
Excellent. Well, great to connect with you as ever. And we've also got an ace student and artist at the LCCM, an indie folk musician who has released music under the name Retro Firefly. We'll be hearing more of it in a few moments. That's the fabulous Samantha Penman. How are you, Samantha?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Great to connect with your good self. And of course, our third in this triumvirate of wonder is the industry liaison for London College of Contemporary Music. That's JD Donovan. How are you, JD?
Yeah, thanks, Alex. I'd like to pinch that introduction off of you forevermore, so thank you for that.
Well, that's fine. Oh, clipping can work wonders in the whole sort of radio industry. Anthony, if we can turn to you first. I mean, neurodiversity is something which has become more and more prevalent over the last few years, but it's something which I suspect has always been present with us as human beings, basically. And it's only relatively recently that people like Lewis Capaldi, as we mentioned, Billie Eilish, example, have kind of raised the whole awareness factor of neurodivergence.
I think you're right. I think it's definitely been something that's always been with us. I mean, it's just common sense, right? We're all different. We all have billions of neurons in our head, trillions of synapses. We're a work in progress, learning and developing every day. And sometimes, you know, people are affected with conditions or, you know, symptoms that prevent their development or challenge them in their day-to-day life. And in particular, I think young people have sometimes found the structured educational system is not open or accessible and inclusive to people of all different ways of thinking. And so it's really refreshing to hear these big music artists, you know, using their power and their voice to shine a light on this and say, yeah, we're all different. And maybe if everyone is accepting, as the crowd at Glastonbury were for Lewis Capaldi this summer, then everyone can find the, you know, the strengths and passions that they have and fulfill their potential.
Well, as mentioned, we're going to be listening to some of the awesome music of Retro Firefly in a few moments. But Samantha, welcome again to the programme. Can you just share with us your own experience with respect to neurodivergence? And indeed, does it impact your work? Does it kind of help focus your creativity? How do you actually work with neurodivergence?
So I've got Tourette's syndrome, and I was diagnosed when I was around about 16 years old. My tics have sort of waxed and waned over time, but I've generally found that keeping my brain active is like the best way for my tics to sort of stay under wraps. The more focused I am, the more clarity I feel in my head and the less ticky I feel. And as a part of that, I find that music is one of the most all-encompassing things to keep my attention and to keep me like thinking and to like actually regulate my emotions as well, to feel quite happy. And so listening to music, I've always found really good. Playing music, I've always found really good. And especially writing music is very therapeutic. And I'd never really tick when I'm doing that.
And JD, as industry liaison for the LCCM, is this something which you're finding, as we mentioned at the top of the piece, some of those names that have actually opened up, people, in a sense, like Samantha, who will be tomorrow's major names, etc. Is this something which you're keen to obviously not necessarily promote, but actually sort of say it's something which needs to be embraced as opposed to feared?
Definitely. I mean, without a shadow of a doubt. And what we're seeing through our research that we've carried out, you know, over half of 16 to 24 year olds believe that music and the creative industries are the best place for neurodiverse people for employment, to build a career. And we're seeing that with fantastic individuals like Samantha. We actually saw that connection between Lewis Capaldi and the crowd at Glastonbury. Music is changing, and the future is the young people that are taking it forwards. And I think what's been the biggest stories this year is seeing that connection, seeing that openness. It's inspiring. You know, I can't speak for Samantha, but my experience working with neurodiverse musicians is that, you know, there's so many, they're so creative, and we need to support them. We all need to be better allies and help them move through the industry, because they are the future, not who are at the top right now.
The record industry, the music industry, has changed substantially over the last couple of decades. I mean, it's probably not necessarily unrecognizable from the end of the 90s, but certainly the position of the major studios, the A&R, artists and repertoire people, that's all changed. I mean, Anthony, as you look at the changing sequence, and obviously with the contemporary music scene, is it something which clearly looking at ways in which folks such as Retro Firefly, for instance, needs to obviously be developing their own social media, etc. Is that something which is for the benefit of musicians, or do you sometimes hearken back, oh, it was so much easier when they could just sign a deal with a record company and give all their money to the record company and get nothing at all?
Well, you know, so myself, like most of the people who work and teach at LCCM, we're all, you know, experienced industry professionals, and I was an artist manager for 10 years, and perhaps bridging that world between the old world and the new world, just as social media were coming in, everything changed, really. It used to be that everything was polished and crafted so that you're presenting a, you know, a finished article. These are superstars and everything about them is perfect. And then you enter a world of social media where people are, you know, live streaming their breakfast, and it's a totally different world, and you're more human as a result, and it's actually, I think, easier for artists to then make connections that they can lead their little crowd, find their crowd and lead their crowd, because people relate to them, not just for the music they make, but for the lifestyle and the specific and unique conditions and challenges they might face. So I think it's refreshing, and I don't think anyone wants to go back to the world where, you know, you sign away your copyright for life and get a couple of shillings in return, and then lose all the power over your image and identity. So now, I think a third of the music market is now DIY artists, self-releasing music, and they have full control, not just over their image and identity and how they present themselves to present their true selves, but also they have, more control over their copyright and revenues as well.
Samantha, I've got to ask the question. The name Retro Firefly, is it to do with Fireflies flying backwards, or is it something to do with the Joss Whedon TV series, which you're far too young to remember, from the early part of the 21st century?
Neither of those. I don't really know where it came from, but it occurred, and that's who I am now. So.
That makes perfect sense. And clearly you're in the indie folk area. Is that something which you kind of say, well, actually, I'm a musician first and foremost, and indie folk happens to be a label that people put on me in various ways, or would you kind of qualify that?
I think it's sort of like one of those weird situations where you start to write music and then you kind of realise, I'm going to need to market this somewhere, and you've got to sort of figure out where you fit. And for a long time, I think the sort of first few songs I wrote, they were all very different. I didn't really know what part of the industry suited me, and then quite a lot of people would come up to me and say, oh, you're quite folksy, aren't you? You quite sound like maybe Joni Mitchell and people like that. And so I've kind of put that indie folk label on me because I don't feel like I'm really folk and I don't feel like I'm really indie, but I feel like a little mixture of both is probably where I sit.
Hybridization, that's the buzzword, clearly.
Yes.
We need to look on that. JD, 2023, I mean, clearly we had the resurgence of Kylie with Padam Padam. Were there any other big musical moments that you'd particularly sort of say, yeah, I kind of resonated with that?
Yeah, there's so many, Alex. You've got that tune stuck in my head now, and probably everyone listening. So thank you on behalf of all of us. I think, there's been a couple of things. AI taking the forefront, of course, revitalizing John Lennon's previous recording and creating the last Beatle track. But also, I have to name check Beyonce and Taylor Swift, a huge inspiring example to female musicians, how to be an artist, owning your copyrights, planning your own world tours and taking them to the next level to record breaking results. It's something that's come up in our conversation with you, that being a really kind human gets you really far. And both of those individuals are known for their kindness with their fans, but also with their teams. Beyonce saying hello to the cleaners at every stadium she plays and treating them just like how she treats the superstars that come and appear with her, or Taylor Swift tipping her tour truckers $100,000 for all their hard work transporting her tour infrastructure across the states. And those are the stories, along with Lewis Capaldi and Robbie and everyone else opening up, that will stay with us and really inspire the next gen, people like Samantha, the fantastic examples that they are, to go on and be those superstars. So for 2024, if you ask me to predict, it'd be impossible, but I just hope that those individuals continue to follow their passion, find their crowd and carve their way through the industry to success.
I mean, Anthony, JD's raised a very interesting concept there in terms of kindness, which I think sometimes within all industries, let alone the music industry, has sometimes been absent. Do you think we could be seeing the demise of the diva, or is the notion of I'll only actually do this tour if I actually have red Smarties in my Winnebago, those kind of demands might be going?
Well, I think that, maybe illustrates the point we were talking about earlier, that people, were labeled divas because they had particularities about how they like things. Again, everyone's different. Everyone likes different things. And actually, the legend around the red Smarties, I think they were blue, actually, is all about making sure someone's paying attention to the rider. They don't actually want just blue Smarties in the bowl, but they want to make sure that the sound system's right and the security is provided and the sound engineer is sober. And so those conditions are all put in with something outrageous to make sure that someone comes back and says, oh, what do you mean? We can't do that. Oh, good. We've read the rider then.
Sober sound engineers that make a good name for a band, I think, actually, but that's a possibility. Just staying with you, Anthony, for a few moments, if people are listening to this and they happen to be interested in contemporary music, etc., what's the best place to get in touch, or how do they get in touch with the London College of Contemporary Music?
Well, come and join our community. We've got a vibrant Instagram page, LCCM London. We've got a weekly newsletter that goes out to all our subscribers called Fast Track, run by JD. There's open days and other ways if you are interested in music education, which is a great option for people who have these, extra surges of creativity and slightly different from the norm, then it's the right place for you. Come and join us.
And Samantha, from your own perspective, would you like to just share your own experience with the LCCM?
So I transferred to LCCM this year because my younger brother's actually there, and he was telling me about how brilliant it is, how like music focused it is, career driven. And I've gone and I've actually found that like I feel so calm and creative at LCCM. Like my tics have actually been better since starting, I think, because all of the classes are so engaging. So I definitely recommend it if you're neurodivergent, because yeah, it's a really engaging, like encouraging atmosphere that really, like, it makes my brain happy.
Which is all great. And in a few moments, we're going to be asking you to give a little announcement for Retro Firefly and Another Lifetime. But before we do that, two final questions for Anthony and JD. First of all, Anthony, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been good for you?
A reasonably interesting what?
Zoomer, the kind of thing we call these things in the 21st
century.
Oh, wow,
okay.
As opposed to phone links or general chats, etc. We call them Zoomers.
I thought you were commenting on my age. Calling me.
Not at all. Has it been good for you?
Boomer. I've loved it. I've really enjoyed chatting to you.
We'll speak to boomers. We'll speak to Gen Xers. We'll speak to even the alphas that were born in 2010 these days.
Wow.
Or after 2010. And JD,
are we back to A now?
Wow.
We are indeed back to A with alphas. That's from 2010 to I think 2025. The alpha generation is lasting, so that's a key thing. And JD, good for you.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm glad that we managed to cover the alphabet with Anthony, the principal. He does actually lead more than just letters at LCCM. He does a great job of providing the environment that Samantha suggests. But thank you so much for having us.
Precisely. Well, Samantha, it's over to you to have the last word now with your music as Retro Firefly. Would you like to introduce yourself? Singing, of course, what we're about to actually hear, which is Another Lifetime.
So hi, I'm Sam, I'm Retro Firefly. Thank you so much for talking to me today about neurodivergency with these wonderful people. I hope you enjoy my music.
Trees fall and our bodies start to crumble, break and bend. When you look at me, when your love away from me, yes, I'll find. time slips away from me, yes, I will find you in another lifetime. I will find you in another lifetime. I will find you in.
Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
Well, it's nearly 18 months since we last featured our next author of the week with the program. He just actually completed his first novella then, Wolf at the Door. And the biggest question that was going through the minds of Kathy Manso and indeed Joel McKay was, what about the seating arrangements for that dinner? You're having a nice family Thanksgiving. Suddenly a werewolf turns up. What could possibly go wrong? Well, we're delighted to find out now from the awesome creator of Wolf at the Door and to speak about his latest incursion into the worlds of magical worlds of stuff, Joel McKay. How are you, Joel?
Very well. Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be back.
Absolutely. I mean, it was Friday, July the 22nd, 2022, when you were last with us. I can't believe, literally, it seems like just yesterday, but there you go.
It does, yeah. I've been reflecting on that as I get through this year. This has felt like the fastest. I don't know about you, but this has felt like the fastest year of my life for sure.
Yeah. Proof that time is just kind of an illusion at the best of the days. We also welcome to the Author of the Week feature from Romania, although currently in Coventry, Anna Coscanel. How are you, Anna?
I'm good, thank you. Apparently I'm running through cities and to trade.
Yes, well, that's what it's all about, as indeed in North Carolina, which, as we know, Joel, is the center of the universe in all sorts of ways. I know that Kathy Manso is keen to claim this for Florida, but of course our regular North Carolina correspondent, Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
I am doing pretty well. How are you?
Excellent. Now, Joel, back to yourself, because after all, we've had a feature on neurodiversity in the music industry to precede this particular thing. You have been busy because you've recently published, following on from the huge success of Wolf at the Door, Number Hundred. That's Number Hundred, not Number Hundred, but Number Hundred in the Taish Books anthology, Water, Selkies, Sirens, and Sea Monsters. Now, let's clarify to start off with, Joel. Selkies, Sirens, and Sea Monsters is not a radio station that you're setting up as a companion to Siren Radio, obviously, in British Columbia, is it?
No.
Or is it?
No, it isn't at all. No.
So talk us through the title and how those features connect together, and also Number Hundred.
How do I unpack all this? So probably the most relevant piece is It Came from the Trees and Other Violent Aberrations. So that's the next book. It's out January 26th. It's a collection of five stories. All of them kind of fit together with the common theme of dread, and are in one form or another are set in British Columbia. And there's three horror stories in there, a science fiction thriller and a bit of a grimdark fantasy. So it's an interesting collection. It's a short collection. You can pick it up and put it down in an afternoon. And I purposefully wanted it to be not overly long. And then you're right. You mentioned Number Hundred. It was the first fiction short story that I had published a couple of years ago. It's actually it's a comedy monster story about two good old boys who go for a fishing trip, duck out of their jobs at the mill and go for a fishing trip not far from where I live here. And then encounter a massive kaiju that lives in a lake and things go sideways. And there's been several other short stories that have been published too. So earlier this year, I had a story come out called The Ministry of Labor Transition, which was a hard science fiction with bewildering stories. It's free to read online. And then also had another free to read online called Tales of the Crypto, which is what happens when crypto mining kind of crosses with eldritch horror in small town Canada. So that is out there as well. And then two others also came out. Sorry, I'm just droning on here. Erie River Publishing had a water anthology that came out with a story in there that I penned called Don't Rock the Boat. It's about a canoe trip that goes sideways. You can see a common theme of Canadian wilderness and monsters and terror kind of bleeding into my work wherever possible. And then lastly, Sleigh House Publishing just released their 2023 collection of stories. In there is a story about a ghoul that won't die and continues to haunt someone over a 100-year period. Doesn't matter where they go in the world. So that's out now too. So it's been to your point, it's been a busy year. There's been a lot happening. And so, it's nice to kind of come back and talk to you again and reflect on, you know, what changed since that 18 months ago when we last spoke.
Well, as I say, we've not just got one co-host today, but two co-hosts. And let's turn first of all to Jessica. Jessica, any questions you'd like to put about Joel, who apparently, from his description at least, seems to be providing every reason for you not to go north of the border and leave North Carolina and head northwards to Canada? It's a terrifying place.
No, I completely disagree. I think, the South, we have a lot of spooky folklore, especially around nature. So I love hearing that. And it actually makes me want to go to British Columbia even more to hear about it. But I'm really curious, how did you get interested in British Columbia's folklore?
That's a long question to answer. So, and it's a good one. So I'm born and raised here. I'm a third generation in British Columbia, which for a lot of BCers is a long time, unless you're Indigenous. And if you're Indigenous, then it's nothing. And so I've been very fortunate in my career in the work that I do now, but also when I was a journalist, I've gotten to travel around British Columbia. And British Columbia, for those who don't know, I mean, you can fit California, Oregon, and Washington inside BC, and you still have room to spare. We have thousands of kilometers of coastline and multiple mountain ranges. It looks like Middle Earth. I get that New Zealand is a stand-in for Middle Earth, but I think British Columbia would probably do just as good of a job. And so, you know, it's beautiful, it's rugged, it's wild, it has a long history. And the benefit of driving around it and exploring it and meeting people in it is you start to learn a lot about the province. So I developed a natural, I think, passion for this part of the world, and appreciation for its history. And then when you talk about folklore, I mean, there's two sides to that. There's, I suppose, what could be called immigrant folklore. So for those that, you know, came over and settled the place and colonized it, which is largely, you know, an extension of British and Western European folklore that sort of is then muckled onto this place. And then more recently, certainly other more diverse cultures that are very present in British Columbia, especially down around Vancouver. But there's a whole other side of it, which is the sort of, I think, more aptly described as spiritual mythology and oral storytelling traditions amongst the 200 different Indigenous nations that call this place home. And when you start diving into that, it is rich, extraordinarily rich. And there's endless storytelling possibilities within it. And so for me, there's really no need to set many stories elsewhere. Though I must say there is one story in this new collection that takes place in London. And it's about British Columbia kids who break into a private museum in London to repatriate British Columbia cultural archives or artifacts, only to discover an eldritch god chained to the basement within this London museum. Now, that is not at all a commentary on how I feel Britain manages its museums at all. I just know there are a lot of great museums in Britain and full of lots of artifacts from around the world, and it seemed like a fun adventure story to tell. So there you go.
Yeah, when all said and done, Joel, you've got a North American citizen, you've got a Romanian citizen, and you've got somebody who's Irish, Polish. So we're not going to worry too much about the British side of things there on that basis. But
perfect.
You know, what the
good,
heck?
Good.
Having said that, I'm pleased you actually just put in that slight caveat there. You talked about obviously the mythology. It sounds to me as though actually we might as well forget about Romania and Transylvania. We should all come over to British Columbia, Anna. From your own point of view and the Romanian perspective, any thoughts or questions for Joel?
Well, I was just thinking, because now I'm doing economics at university, a postgrad in economics. I was wondering, how did you manage to switch from journalism to economics? Because I am thinking of switching from economics to something else, something more creative. So how did you start doing that? And basically, what was like the main challenge that you encountered from switching domains?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when I was a journalist, I really wanted to be like a war correspondent and global sort of journalist. But when I went to J school and graduated, the jobs that were available in Canada were largely community newspapers. And so I did that for a bit. And then I ended up in Vancouver as a business reporter. And I fell in love with that work. And I covered heavy industry, so commodities markets globally. So mining, forestry, and oil and gas. So those industries are critical to the Canadian economy and the global economy. And so, you know, if you're going to be writing about them and researching and reporting stories to CEOs and other decision makers, you need to learn economics. So I did some of my own education on economics and then was reporting on it. And that job, this kind of ties back to the traveling around British Columbia. You know, Vancouver is a very heavy city for tech innovation, filmmaking, but its actual backbone is the commodities markets and the port there. And the rest of British Columbia's economy, the true engine here is the export of those types of materials. So I started traveling around BC and going to visit mines and mills and pipeline projects. That's how I fell in love with northern British Columbia and the communities that are here and telling stories about them. And I had an opportunity after a little while. Admittedly, I got very frustrated with the direction that journalism was going and the consolidation of the industry, globally, but especially in Canada, and switched into public relations for an economic development organization. And then that transitioned into, because I was a journalist, economic research and analysis. And then eventually I took over as chief executive officer 7 years ago. So I'm a bit of an oddball in the public sector in British Columbia. I think I'm the only journalist who runs a former journalist who runs a financial institution that is focused on economic development. But there is a pathway there. And I think, to be real honest with you, the pathway is that not a lot of people want to leave major centers. And if you're young and you're stuck on building a career in a major center, you're going to get pigeonholed into jobs that, the competition is going to be a lot stiffer, and you're going to get pigeonholed into certain categories. It's going to be hard to get ahead. It's going to be hard to diversify. But small rural places are dying for people all over the world. And it's especially true here in Canada. And I think parts of the rural U.S. too, where if you move into these places and you're willing to say yes to something, the world's your oyster. You can kind of chart your own destiny and do things that you would never have the opportunity to do if you were in a major city. And you get to reinvent yourself and have an adventure. And that kind of goes back to what I wanted to do originally as a journalist. I wanted to have an adventure. And I did. And I found that adventure here in its, as you said, the terrifying north of British Columbia, and managed to make that transition between journalism to economics and economic development, and now writing horror, apparently.
And with this transition, do you see yourself transitioning further more to investment banking at some point in your life, or do you actually want to have a social life as well?
Well, so social life, I don't know about. I have a wife and two young kids, so I don't have a lot of time. No, investment banking doesn't interest me whatsoever. To be real honest with you, the thing that gets me out of the bed in the morning is working in small communities that are underdogs and trying to find ways to solve their present challenges or diversify their economy and jobs. Like really, like I'm really driven not by, you know, the flow of money and project creation and policy and all that stuff. That's fun. But really what drives me is going into a small place and seeing the impact of the work we do or others do where people's lives are better. And it's not just income and having a job. It's like their health outcomes, right? Their longevity, their overall quality of life in really small places. We got a long way to go in Canada outside of major centers to truly claim that the rest of this country is a developed nation, because in a lot of cases it isn't. It's underdeveloped, and we're closer in the rural middle and northern Canada to a development economic situation than true industrial economic development. And that has to be taken into account. So I love the community work. I love working in the public sector. I love being able to travel around and have those adventures. And I think at the heart of it, I'm still probably a storyteller, right? So I think there's a part of me that it likes doing this work for now. Maybe I'll do it for a long time. Maybe I won't. I've been CEO now for 7 years, and have been very fortunate to have another few board director roles that have been impactful here in British Columbia for me, and I hope those organizations. But really, I'd love one of these books to sell a million copies so I can just keep doing that all the time. And then maybe supplement that with, you know, some community development work somewhere, right? That would be the ideal state.
Or just regular media interviews with the Midweek Drive and so on. I mean, we can obviously accommodate that, which is one of the reasons why I decided to actually throw up, I think it's Vancouver in the background there, basically, just to actually sort of give you some sort of notion of the sort of support we're showing for British Columbia. At least I think it's Vancouver.
That's Toronto.
Well, so there you go.
I'm a very kind Canadian, but I am going to point out that that's like 5,000 kilometers east of here. And Vancouverites, we're not huge fans of people from Toronto. So
I've got to change it immediately, clearly. You know, it's just one of those things. Let's move to the next clear question, which is, have you ever visited North Carolina, Joel?
No, but my aunt and uncle, who are like a second set of parents to me, they live just outside of Raleigh. And they moved there about from Seattle about 4 years ago. And so I spent a good portion of my life kind of growing up around Seattle because my aunt and uncle lived there. My parents actually live in Idaho. So they live way down in the reddest state in the union. And I can tell you they are not the reddest people in the union. And then my aunt and uncle moved just outside of Raleigh, and I've got a couple of cousins in just outside of Houston. And so it's on the list, but I haven't got there yet. I hear it's beautiful.
Then you may well be on the correct side of this next question, which is known as the legendary Jessica Burtis author nutrition question when it comes to a couple of North Carolina delicacies. Jessica.
Yes. So I have to ask if you've ever tried these snacks, but have you ever had sweet tea or boiled peanuts by chance?
No.
Okay, well, when you come to North Carolina to visit your family in Raleigh, you have to try both. They are excellent, and they should definitely make an appearance in the next folklore story you tell, which maybe you'll just set it in North Carolina. I don't know.
I need to do a trip down there to, you know, understand the place before I can write a story in it, right?
Yes, well, you definitely should, and you'll have to take a trip when you're in Raleigh. You can take a trip to the Appalachian Mountains, or you can go out to the coast. We have so many stories set in the mountains, and tons of creatures out there, and lots of pirate ghosts out on the coast. So there's always nice stories here.
Yeah, nice. Although I hear the Appalachians are more like foothills compared to the mountains that we have in British Columbia.
They might not be quite as tall, but, you know.
I'm just teasing.
They're big for us.
There you go, Joe. I mean, troubling the Canadian-American sort of balance once again. It's just a challenge in all sorts of ways. Actually, Anna, do you have any particular delicacies from Romania and Bucharest which you feel Joel should try when he finally decides to actually check out the original Transylvania?
Please don't even get me started on that, on the Christmas food we have. And I'm actually cooking it right here in Coventry. So you have to come to Romania, but during Christmas or during Easter, we have our traditional food. It's just amazing. We have a thing called sarmale, which is basically like minced meat with onion and a bit of vegetables. Put in like sour cabbage and boiled. It's just amazing. It's just amazing.
If nothing else, Joel, you can't say we're not kind of raising the culinary stakes here in terms of this particular
interview.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey,
Anyway, back to Jessica. Any other standard questions you'd like to put to Joel?
I had to ask, if we were to start with one of your works, which one would you say we should start with?
Oh, I guess the joy is you don't have to start anywhere. You can dive in wherever you want. Wolf of the Door is good if you want something longer. It's a novella. It's not super long. It's only about 130 pages, but it gives you a sense of my style, which is I try to write. I enjoy writing that is page turners and good old fashioned yarns. Right. So that's typically what I'm writing. I'm always thinking about how do I get the reader to the next page? How do I keep them engaged? How do I make this fun and a little bit memorable? And so that I think comes across that in the style for Wolf at the Door. It's horror comedy. So also if you're not an avid horror reader, but you kind of want to try something out, that's kind of a nice way to ease into it. Because it's not as dark or heavy as some of the other work from myself or others that are out there. And then, of course, the collection coming up is probably also a really good place to start because it's kind of a sampling of five stories and they're all a little bit different. So it's a bit of a potpourri of my work, and it's within the tradition of pulp fiction. So either of those two, I think, would be a good place to start.
I have to ask, this is off topic, but it's in my head. I have to ask, how cold is it right now in British Columbia? Because it doesn't feel like winter here. And I have to ask if you're getting snow soon.
You know what? We've got a real problem here. We're getting an El Nino effect this year that's warmer than anything I've ever seen. So this time last year, we were down around, we had about 2 weeks of minus 40. That's minus 40 Celsius, which is really around minus 40 Fahrenheit too. It's around that temperature that they kind of line up. That's not uncommon in this part of the world for a week or two, and it's a good thing. You need that cold to deal with the bugs and sort of build up that snowpack. This year right now it's looking like a green Christmas, and it's absolutely bizarre. So I left the house this morning, it's 7 degrees Celsius, it's cloudy, it's rainy, it feels like the coast. It's unbelievable. And we're coming off a bad season of wildfires and drought, so I think everybody here is crossing their fingers that winter is going to show up sometime soon. And I gotta say, like, I'm a little disappointed because one of the joys of living in this part of the world is a guaranteed white Christmas, and it would appear we're not getting one. So, you know, I feel a little cheated on that front.
Yeah. Whenever I think of Canada in winter, I think of just tons of snow, the pictures my friends would send from Canada in the winter and how lovely it is. And it's always green. We always have a green Christmas here. I think it's 10 degrees Celsius right now, which is pretty cold for us, but I don't think very cold at all compared to other places.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
You've also produced a short Western horror story entitled Hands. Would you like to just share with us, Joel, the thoughts of media or genre hybridization? And I mean, if the Western horror story, are there any other genres you've ever considered? I mean, would you consider, I don't know, a short story which focuses on the musical genre, for instance?
I don't know enough about that genre to actually do anything effective in there. But to your question, you know, how do I feel about, you know, genre mashups and fusion? I think it's great. Like, I'm a big believer that the artist should be free to go out and create and not be held to, you know, certain sandboxes or limitations, right? And either then your art lands or it doesn't. And that is the ultimate freedom of both expression by the creator and the audience that then engages with that art. And so for me, I love Westerns. There was a call out for a Western horror anthology early in 2022. I'd never written a Western short story. And so I decided, I'm like, Western and horror, that kind of sounds like something I'm interested in. So I gave it a shot. And lo and behold, I was lucky. And it was selected, it was published, and the anthology did well. It came out from Bridget's Gate Press last year. And what it ended up being was I thought it was a one-off story, and I really, really liked the character, and I kind of wanted to know what happened next. So the follow-up story is in this upcoming anthology that comes out in January. It Came from the Trees. So it's the second story with that character. And so that's that character, that world, it's a ton of fun to bring together horror and monsters in an Old West setting. There's a lot to like it within that. That's fun to play with. But my hope is that I'm going to return to that character again and again. And it will be a bit like Robert E. Howard's own sort of, you know, he had, you know, five or six, you know, stable characters that he would
he
just
had Carl the Conqueror. He had Conan the Barbarian. He had all sorts of other areas.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, as in somebody trying to write within the tradition of sword and sorcery and pulp fiction, like to me, that's really, really appealing, is to have a couple of key characters where you just kind of go back and sort of, okay, what happened next in the adventure?
And you could always have a reworking in the musical side of things if It Came from the Trees, done as a kind of version of Clint Eastwood singing I Talk to the Trees from the classic musical Paint Your Wagon.
Yeah, yeah. You know, on that note, I mean, yeah, like music, like I can't read music. I can't play music. I love music. Like, but I'm not gonna dive in. There is some amazing horror that's come out in recent years, and the author's name is slipping me, where music is, and it's actually out of a U.S. Southern tradition, where music is really, really baked into the identity of the characters and the place, and in fact the horror too. And I just love it. The author is John Horner Jacobs. If you haven't read his stuff, you've got to read his stuff. I think it's just the best stuff I've read from anybody new in recent years. It's unbelievable. But one genre I would love to see a resuscitation of is almost like the sports pulp story. So back in like the 30s, 40s, and 50s, it was pretty common amongst the pulp magazines for, yeah, there would be, you know, scary stories, monster stories, ghost stories, fantasy stories, science fiction stories. But there would also be like the boxing story. And Joe Lansdale has tackled that in some of his fiction. He's a Texas author, very well known. And I think he's done an incredible job. But I would love at some point to have an idea that led me down, like write the boxing story, right? Or write the race story, something like that. That sort of brings sports back into it, but in a pulpy kind of tradition. I think that would be a ton of fun because you don't see much of it these days.
Arguably, the entire Rocky movie series were simply expanded versions of what would have been the old Pulp Fiction short story for sports.
Yeah, yeah.
My last question is a bit about Christmas, since it's almost Christmas. I was wondering, are you ready for Christmas? Are the gifts ready? Is everything put together? Because for me, it's not yet. And
Anna's clearly having a panic in Coventry, which, don't worry, Siren, the radio listener, by the time this is transmitted in the hiatus, Sheila's got soul. But Joel, is it a case of in the McKay household, everything's like a well-oiled machine? You've got your two children who are all set and ready to actually have a nice long night's sleep over Christmas Eve, wake up promptly at a certain specific time on Christmas morning and see the gifts that Santa has actually delivered, even though he hasn't got any snow to rest with his reindeer on.
Yes, but not because of me. My wife is so incredibly organized. She's out doing Christmas shopping as she sees things come up in like June and July. So by the time we get around to December, she's taken care of that. And then the two of us work together to get kind of the house in order. And the house is in order. The lights are up. The tree is up. The decorations are out. The arts and crafts are happening. Sugar is everywhere. So, yeah, we're pretty well set. It does feel to me, though, to, you know, if I am detecting a bit of sort of emotional panic about how quickly it's coming, I feel the same way this year too. I don't feel like, for whatever reason, 2023 didn't allow me to really ease into the holiday season. All of a sudden it was just bang, where Christmas is 48 hours away, right? So I'm hoping, because today is technically the last day of work for the year, that I will be able to embrace the season in the next 5 or 6 hours before it shows up.
And Jessica, any thoughts from yourself that you'd like to throw to Joel as we begin to wrap up his second appearance as Author of the Week on the Midweek Drive?
What literary thing are you most looking forward to next year in 2024, which is crazy?
Like of my own work?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the release in January, but I'll admit, like, that makes me really nervous. Anytime there's a release, it makes me super nervous. So like I'm actually not looking forward to it. It's kind of like this, it's kind of like, oh, okay. So I'm excited, but I'm also terrified. But I would say I'm just putting up finishing touches on the first draft of a new novel. So what I'm really looking forward to, and surprise, surprise, another British Columbia horror. What I'm really looking forward to is the editing process and then figuring out, how to get it out into the world and what way I want to do that. So that's probably kind of what's most on my mind right now.
We will, of course, be following this little piece with Clint Eastwood singing I Talk to the Trees. But do you have any other musical inspirations, Joel, that you'd like to share with us that maybe inspire you whilst you're kind of, thinking up more horrific ideas from British Columbia and more?
Yeah, I usually when I'm so I listen to all kinds of music. I love all kinds of stuff from Taylor Swift and 90s rap to 90s country and pop music and everything else these days, as well as rock, new and old. But when I'm writing, it's typically ambient, it's instrumental. So some of my most cherished artists that I listen to are Brian Eno, Steve Roach, even Jeremy Sewell's work for the Elder Scrolls games is really, really powerful. But also, I found with this project I'm working on right now, listening to the soundtrack to The Fog by John Carpenter, excellent, absolutely excellent. Same with the main theme for The Shining by Wendy Carlos, just super powerful stuff. And so I'm one of those people that loves to get to that place, loves the escape of writing. And music helps with that. So, yeah, I've always got something going, usually on repeat, usually instrumental to get me to whatever place I'm trying to get to. And hopefully that translates on the page.
And it's fair to say that The Shining would just not be the same without the snow. But there we are.
Yeah.
That's something else we need to come to grips with. Okay, well, we're at the stage where we've got two final questions for you. Jessica, would you like to ask the first of them, please?
I would love to. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
This is
Fantastic.
good. And because Anna seems to be having an awful lot of extraneous noise in the background, I'm not sure whether it's just the wild citizens of Coventry who are kind of baying at the door like crazed wolves, desperately keen to actually sort of say, we want to have a part of this Transylvanian cooking.
It's the neighbors.
Well, it's always the neighbors. Just go to the dinner party that was set up in the novella that you were writing last year, Joel. That's the neighbors. By the way, did you manage to map out the seating sequence effectively for that in the end?
I did. Yeah, it took time. And that to me was the critical part of the first part of that book, was making sure that what I did was the opposite of what you would want to do at a dinner party, is I sat all the wrong people next to one another, with the express intent of this will take care of itself in the narrative structure once these people start talking. And did it ever. So there's a writing lesson learned for writing dinner parties. That's the best way to go.
Absolutely. Well, again, following on from that, by the way, how can people follow you on the web? Are you on X as these days? Have you
Oh.
decided to abandon Elon Musk completely? Is it a case of you're TikToking? Where's the best way to keep in touch with Joel McKay, writer extraordinaire and indeed general all-round award winner?
I would love to leave X and just have not done it yet. So you can find me there. Joel C. McKay is it. And then also on Instagram and Threads, author Joel McKay, for both, you'll find me there. Those are kind of the places I keep being told I need to have a website and a newsletter, and I just haven't gotten around to it. So.
Well, I shall certainly go into deep guilt tripping now, having not only actually thrown up a an image of Toronto as opposed to Vancouver, but also having mispronounced McKay as Mackay. It's just too
Don't
much
worry
to actually
about it.
cope with.
Everybody does. And I will say that within the Mackay clan or the McKay clan, there is no broad consensus on the pronunciation of the surname. So you are in good stead, sir. Don't worry about it.
Well, then the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to join us once more in 2024? Will you come back and speak to us more of a more Mackay universe happenings?
I would love to, because it also gives me an opportunity to learn about the culinary delights of Romania and North Carolina.
I talk to the trees, but they don't listen to me. I talk to the stars, but they never hear me. The breeze hasn't time to stop and hear what I say. I talk to them all in vain. But suddenly my words reach someone else's ear. That someone else's heart strings too. I tell you my dreams, and while you're listening to me, I suddenly see them come true. I can see us on an April night, looking out across a rolling farm, having supper in the candlelight, walking later arm in arm. Then I'll tell you how I pass the day, thinking mainly how the night will be. Then I'll try to find the words to say all the things you mean to me. I tell you my dream, and while you're listening to me, I suddenly see him come true.